Hello and welcome to Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And I swear this week I'm only a little doped up on cold medicine.
Just a little doped up on cold medicine.
Just a little. I will apologize now for any potential coughing fits, but...
Your coughing fits are different from my coughing fits. And this is part two of our coverage of CinemaCon. So much happened. Only half of it intended to have occurred.
Yeah.
This is kind of the, oh shit, things went fucky edition. So last week was stuff that was announced and supposed to happen. This week is, I'm sorry, what? Oh God. Mike, what the fuck?
I feel like the only place we can start is with Olivia Wilde.
Ooh, that was cold.
That was a thing. So Olivia Wilde was on stage to present her the trailer for her movie Don't Worry, Darling. Which, side note, having seen the trailer. Holy God, I need to see this movie.
That looks fantastic.
It looks so Stepford Wives with a little extra sci-fi that I want this movie and I want it now. Now, during the presentation, somebody comes up to the stage and slides a mysterious brown envelope toward her, and you'll see on, well, like the video at this point is already online, but she goes, you know, oh, is this for me? Takes the envelope, I think essentially thinking it's an unsolicited script. Needless to say, it was not. It was custody documents from her former partner, Jason Sudeikis. Just the thing you want to get while discussing your new movie.
And, like, I'm going to go out on a limb and assume Jason Sudeikis, not exactly known for being a dickhead around Hollywood,
no,
did not intentionally send people there to serve her while she was on stage for custody of their child. I'm just going to presume, and I might be wrong, that Jason Sudeikis is not that much of an asshole.
No, exactly. Like, I right now really just have no reason to believe that Sudeikis even knew that this happened. At least not right away.
All he got was a little text saying, it's been delivered, and he went, yep. Oh, good, and went on with his life until the irate phone calls and texts, I'm sure, started to pile up.
Yeah, and needless to say, social media has not been very kind toward Jason Sudeikis around this. And it's kind of fascinating because it's an almost 50-50 split of moral outrage and people who actually understand how the delivery of legal documents works. Because, quite simply, what a lot of people are forgetting is the simple fact that the people who are tasked to serve documents like this, whether it's like custody papers, subpoenas, quite simply put, they are tasked to do it by a specific time and by any means necessary.
Exactly. And they will deliver it. And there's very little that you can do against them. That person technically was an officer of the court and didn't trespass. Like, there's nothing you could do. Yeah, they went up on stage and handed the celebrity a document in person. There's nothing that you can do. They did their job. I'm not too sure if they're in trouble or if they got a raise for going the extra mile. Like, oh, wow, you embarrass the client. But at the same time, damn, you really succeeded there. You
yeah.
You went for the Hail Mary in front of the entire press corps and you pulled it off. we're definitely getting sued. But you, wow, incredible.
The thing that I'm actually getting a kick out of, and mostly as a result of a certain famous event at a certain previous ceremony. Now, most of my general information was from an article on Deadline, but I also came across one on Variety with this headline. CinemaCon to, quote, reevaluate security protocols after Olivia Wilde served mystery envelope on stage. Hey, Academy, take some notes. Also coming out of CinemaCon. Now, this was originally supposed to be in the lightning round in part one, and I just straight up missed it when I was pulling up articles.
What?
Which is either negligence or a sign of how little I care. Take your pick.
I'm going to go with malice.
All things considered, that could also work. because Sony, and I'm just going to say it right now. Sony, please stop. Just stop.
Stop. Just stop.
Has announced Bad Bunny to play Spider-Man character El Muerto in standalone Marvel pick for Sony.
And I stood there in reaction to this and went, I don't know who either of those people or characters are, and moved on with my life. I literally have no clue who either of those people are. I have an Alexa, and the other day it popped up with like one of those little promotional questions being like, why don't you ask me if Bad Bunny is in a Marvel film? And I was like, fuck off, Alexa. I don't even know who the hell that is.
Bad Bunny is a Puerto Rican recording artist, apparently one of like the highest selling, platinum selling recording artist, Latin Grammy winner, super successful in the music industry. As you've probably noticed, we don't listen to a whole lot of music here.
I mean, I listen to a whole lot of music, but typically not like necessarily. I don't know. Whatever the kids are like, I am almost 37. I am a 37-year-old white woman. I am sorry for so much.
Yeah. And as a 42-year-old white man, I'm just going to say I'm sorry and leave it there.
I'm sorry.
The only reason I know about Bad Bunny at all is that he has appeared with World Wrestling Entertainment a few times, worked a few matches, and actually like did legitimately impress and do very well for himself.
Oh, okay.
He, in terms of like in-ring performance, he was probably the best celebrity guest that they had had since Stephen Amell.
Fair, and like, I have not been paying attention to like modern wrestling. I mostly watch like OSW Review, and so I'm decades behind. The last great celebrity cameo I remember would be David Arquette.
Yeah, I don't think even David Arquette likes to talk about that a whole lot.
World champion David Arquette.
Now, when you look that up and when you get enraged, I would like to note for the record, David Arquette did not want to be world champion David Arquette.
And to be fair, Ready to Rumble is at least decently watchable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Is he all right?
Sorry, Paige. I really am sorry. Canyon, oh, damn, sorry. But you should know better than to trust someone from Hollywood. What the?
So, in terms of the wrestling side of this character, at least, I know Bad Bunny can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I know he has some acting experience, but I've never seen him perform, so I can't comment there.
And to be clear, is the character he's playing, I mean, again, stupid question, but I don't read Spider-Man. I am an X-Men idiot. Like, my entire life I have been an X-Men idiot. Like, dumb, pretty, international people, idiot team of mutants who fuck. I am a dumb X-Men idiot, and I love me all of it. I don't give a shit about the Avengers. I don't give a shit about the Fantastic Four. I actually, honestly, don't like Peter Parker. I do not like him as a person. So I don't pay attention to most of his books. So anyway, I assume that this character is a luchador, considering the wrestling.
Precisely. Quick summary in the article from Deadline here. The character of El Muerto, aka Juan Carlos. Just that name just bugs me for some reason.
It's like John Smith.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Juan Carlos was a superpowered wrestler who originally fought Spider-Man in a charity wrestling match in which he nearly unmasked the web-slinger before being stung by Spider-Man with a paralyzing poison. Wait, what?
That seems...
I don't remember that being a thing.
Is that a Miles Morales power?
He has Miles Morales has what I think is a Venom Sting, but that's more of an energy blast.
Okay, so this is more like, so Spider-Man cheated. He cheated. He's the heel. I told you I don't like Peter Parker. Guy's an asshole.
If it's what I think it is, I don't think it's he specifically cheated, but then like this is obscure as fuck if it's what I'm thinking of. Like, I would explain it, but I would need an extra, like, 20 minutes of the show.
Mercy. Oh, my God. Well, in lieu of that, I would like to at least say I'm kind of down and happy with aspects of these movies returning to Spider-Man's origin as a pro wrestler. It's something that just keeps coming up every now and then. It's like, oh, yeah, you forget that... The reason that suit is so stupid is it's a pro wrestler getup. It's for pro wrestling. That's fantastic.
After El Muerto's oppressor El Dorado came to claim his life, he was saved by Spider-Man, after which the two team up to defeat Dorado. Now, on the one hand, as the article goes on to point out, El Muerto would mark the first Latin superhero to get his own film in the universe of Marvel characters, which, cool.
Technically not counting, I mean, Miles Morales and then...
Oh, yeah, Miguel O'Hara.
Thank you. Okay, sure.
Yeah, I have to say, there's a follow-up, because I knew there was something that I wasn't thinking of here, and they should have specified first live-action Latin superhero.
Yeah, because I'm sorry. There was an Oscar won by a movie that had
a
Latin superhero. Anyway.
Also,
please don't forget the Oscar award-winning animated movie.
And on the other hand, as I understand it, El Muerto has shown up in the comic books twice.
Mm. Twice. That's impressive. I mean, I know that Sony is desperate and they're just looking for anything that would look cool or maybe conceptually be interesting. Like, I'm sorry, Madam Web is boring as fuck. So I'm... very interested to see what they decide to actually turn her into that very much is not Madam Web. Because Madam Web is boring as fuck.
And also old?
And old. And usually? Old as fuck. And she has no legs. Weird little tail thing. But this is very much like, we've shown that Venom works. We can make money with the coolest character that we have. And make no mistake, they have gone full 90s Marvel on that. They've gone, this is the coolest character we have. Therefore, it has to define every other film we do. Every other film has to have the second coolest character that we have. And then we move down the line. Here's the third coolest character. And so it's like, what do we got left? All right, so we've got vampire. That's really cool. We'll make a movie out of that. We've got a guy who hunts people and wears, like, most of a lion. His name's Kraven. Yeah, let's do that. We've got Spider Lady. Spider Lady. Okay, what else we got? Hypno Hustler. Fuck off.
I'm sorry. That would be amazing.
I would love to see a Hypno Hustler done in the terrible Sony style, where they take all of the fun and beat it to death. And then we get an overly serious Hypno Hustler film that feels like it was made in 2007, where he fights the evil or the good Hypno Hustler. I mean, he was already a bad guy, so maybe he'd fight like an even worse version of the Hypno Hustler. Like, Hypno Hustler's into disco, and this guy's into, like, house EDM.
It's worrying me that that could actually work.
Yes! Call me, Sony. I know you're desperate.
Yeah, wait. This is better than what you're doing right now, Sony, because let's be honest. We've seen Marvel Studios do the Marvel formula, and it's working. If you've ever wondered what the MCU would have looked like if it was done via the DC formula of just shotgunning as many heroes onto the screen as fast as you can, just look at Sony.
Dirty and cheap, dirty and cheap, and then wicked expensive.
As much as I should be shocked, this is also the studio that wanted to bring Jackpot to the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it before and I'll say it again. You just went, who? Exactly. Now, next up, let's talk the kind of sort of sadness of directors leaving big projects.
No, not kind of sort of sadness. Sexy, awesome drama. Sexy, awesome drama. Vin Diesel's egomaniacal divaness. Yes, yes. The Rock was right.
we're going to get to him. I wanted to hit another director first.
Aww.
Because that one, we want to let that one percolate and just kind of build for a moment. Because first up is John Watts, who we all know as the director of the Spider-Man trilogy. And sir, we thank you for your service.
Very nice, very nice. Thank you.
He has, however, exited as the director of the MCU's Fantastic Four movie.
That's okay. He's earned a break. He currently holds, I want to say, 3 of the top 5, if not 6, box offices in history. He's allowed to chill.
And I love that you said it that way, because that is exactly why he left. He has flat out said, quoting Variety here, "Making 3 Spider-Man films was an incredible and life-changing experience for me," Watts said in the statement. And side note, let's be honest here, you're goddamn right it was.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "I'm eternally grateful to have been a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe for 7 years. I'm hopeful we'll work together again, and I can't wait to see the amazing vision for Fantastic Four brought to life." And in a separate statement, Marvel Studios' Kevin Feige came out and said that collaborating with Watts on the Spider-Man movies, quote, "has been a true pleasure. We were looking forward to continuing our work with him to bring the Fantastic Four into the MCU, but understand and are supportive of his reasons for stepping away. We are optimistic that we will have the opportunity to work together again at some point down the road." Now, as boilerplate and probably went through numerous lawyers as these statements sound, at the same time, it's just that nice, this happened, it happened at a good time, and everybody seems to have gone about it the right way.
Yeah, even if there was some underlying nastiness for any reason, which I don't suspect it was. It sounds like pure exhaustion, which is, like, that's a lot of stress. You have incredibly expensive films that are expected to do record-breaking numbers, and you have to do that three times. There are professional directors with decades experience who would just be like, no, fuck off, and leave. That was incredible. He achieved something truly stupendous, and yeah, he absolutely deserves every moment of what's coming forward, of relaxation, of small projects, and it just seems like, as much of that is a lot of lawyer speak, I don't think it's hiding much of anything beyond, wow, that was fucking crazy. I think I want to do something else now before my brain leaks out of my head.
Exactly. And as another plus, just the simple fact that he didn't leave like a week into the start of filming, no matter what the MCU online fandom would try to tell you.
He didn't even like interrupt the promotion for Multiverse of Madness much.
No, he really didn't. Like, it was just that nice, quiet, simple, I would love to, but I need to go.
Yeah, it's so early in the production process, I can just let, you know, walk away, and things will take their turn, we'll see what happens. And as someone who actually has, we're recording this Thursday night, I did get my hands on Multiverse of Madness, and it's good. It's real good. We'll talk about that in a couple of days.
Yeah.
But when we get there, you'll see how this is really interesting timing. Anyway.
Yeah. Speaking of, no, fuck off, I'm out.
No, fuck off. I'm out.
Of course, is the much bigger, more widely reported departure of Justin Lin, who has left as director of Fast 10 about a week into filming.
It's really funny because it's taken so long to turn Fast and the Furious into the series that it is now.
Yeah.
And it's carried on through this weird new beast that it managed to create. Like it had its original three films that were like idiot car chase films. And then there's like the family era. And then there's the crazy shit toy era, where it's just, we throw all semblance of reality out the window and this ends up in space.
You know, yeah, I was just, like, this is a franchise that has quite literally gone from stealing DVD VHS players to space shuttle cars, because fuck you.
Yeah, so that it took 10 films for it to finally implode and collapse is admirable. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. This should have been shit by 4. It pretty much was shit by like 3. Like, let's face it, when you go Tokyo Drift as your third film in a genre car racing thing, people assumed that they had given up. I remember people just being like, oh, okay, and then the next one's going to be direct to video and have no one memorable in it. No one expected it to suddenly find its feet and run off and do an entire marathon. It was incredible. So, at this point, we've seen everything that this franchise can offer, more or less. Like, not literally entirely, but you have an idea. And so that the 10th one may be a true clusterfuck of arrogance and like presumption and like vision. I can't wait. I hope it is the absolute worst Fast and the Furious film ever. And then just that's the end of it. Of like, and yeah. Then it exploded. That's it. Everyone's dead.
Well, there's going to be this one and then one more.
Damn it.
Well, everyone's dead. It's the standard franchise ending two-parter.
Of course, yeah. You have to have your Deathly Hallows and your Deathly Hallows 2.
And also, frankly, I'm honestly hoping that it's a time travel story because, like, at this point, let's be honest, what's left?
No, you're right. I think they absolutely should follow the Avengers story, like, thrust. How do you end it? How do you top everything that has come before? Time travel, stupid. You top it with time travel. Yeah. You revisit every great moment. You fix the shitty moments so that they're great now. You get to bring everyone back who will agree to come back or who, for contractual reasons, you've snagged the likeness rights of, and fuck them. Oh, you're dead? You're coming back for the last movie.
Yep.
Although I hope instead of trying to just like reinsert the character into the film, I hope he's literally in the sunset. Like Dom just drives like the first car from the first movie up to a mountainside after leaving everything behind. They've had like a 3.5 hour Return of the King extended edition amount of endings. And he drives up to like a cliffside, gets out, sits on the hood of the car, looks out, and the clouds and the light beaming kind of form Paul Walker, and he looks at him and just like smugly gives him a nod and then like turns away back into the sky. And Dom gets in the car and drives off into the sunset. And that's it. That's it. With the last shot being of a box from a DVD player in the rear window of his car.
I gotta be honest, yes, that would be frankly amazing. Paul Walker's character, Brian, may be the only character that no one's really campaigning to bring back. because no, like in all seriousness, like we've just had Han come back, and I have seen a report where I think it was him. I can't remember for sure, but I don't. Somebody is campaigning to have Gal Gadot brought back for the end of the franchise, and she died in. I think it was either 6 or 7.
Robot, clone, twin. Doesn't matter.
All at once.
I like it.
Now, as far as Justin Lin's departure, you know how everybody usually assumes when news like this comes out that it was a case of the lead actor was a total diva and the director just couldn't take it anymore and
quit? Yeah.
Well, apparently it's being reported that the lead actor was a total diva, the director couldn't take it anymore, and just quit.
Yeah, because it's been 10 fucking films, and the man believes that the entire franchise lives on his shoulders and by his word.
Yeah, frankly.
Like, I think this is a glimpse into who Vin Diesel would have become. Like, I feel if we had not only gotten 3 good Riddick films out of that series, and I'm a great fan of The Chronicles of Riddick. That was great high sci-fi. If that had been his franchise instead of Fast and the Furious, and like we were on Riddick 10 or something, this is absolutely the clusterfuck that we are looking at.
Oh, yeah.
He would have been absolutely miserable to work with.
I can 1,000% get behind that logic because of one simple bit of trivia, which is that the studio gave him the rights to Riddick so that he would come back to the Fast and Furious franchise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that is literally how we got the third movie.
And thus he would have supreme executive creative control. That's just fantastic. That is exactly what you want. The star of the movie with complete control over how to shoot the movie. Yay. It won't go wrong at all. I'm sure everything's going to be Sis and Kane. Everything.
I mean, it's not like there's an absolute famous saying about power and what it absolutely does or anything, you know? Yeah.
And now, like, this isn't necessarily saying that Vin Diesel's a bad guy. He's a little too committed to his vision and it comes out in bad ways. Not bad ways as in, like, he smacked someone. That didn't happen. Like, these are disagreements creatively on set. I can completely believe that he is a shit ton of stress to work with.
Oh,
when
yeah.
you remember the fact that he recorded literally every line of dialogue for Groot in every language. This is a man who wants control.
Now, and then you add to that his conduct toward trying to bring The Rock back into the franchise for 10 and 11. And no. Dude, seriously, sir, stay just over there with Hobbs and Shaw. You are in a good place. I will happily take those sequels, and I feel like that's just better for you at this point. And you also, Vin Diesel's good old Instagram stories, particularly the one where he had Justin Lin on, and I say on in quotes, because Justin Lin was in that video, whether he wanted to be or not. And I don't know if you've seen it, but he did not want.
Oh, it looked like a hostage taking. Everything about that was, oh my God, you were being forced to do this. You hate it. And you honestly don't think that you can tell this person any of that.
As someone who has enjoyed the franchise and knows how much Justin Lin put into the franchise, I should not be saying this because he should be the guy directing this franchise toward its end.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I saw just in that video, I am glad that he is gone.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because he wasn't going to be committed to it, not as in, like, oh, you're just not committed to it. It's like, no, clearly there is something about this that he does not want to be involved in. And, like, it's better for him. It's better for the property. Maybe it's better for the studio. They might be like, perhaps we should have some oversight on this.
And ironically, studio oversight may also have been part of the problem, because Lin was also apparently having creative differences with the studio. And I'm kind of getting the sense that it's a case of the studio. They want Vin Diesel to be very happy.
Mm-hmm. Big star, big money.
Now, on the, I guess, plus side, if only because this delay was costing the studio about $1 million a day.
Hooray!
They have found a new director in Louis Leterrier. Leterrier, I think, recently has mostly just... Yeah, okay. Leterrier's credits include Clash of the Titans, as well as the heist thriller Now You See Me, which, actually, I did rather enjoy that one. I had fun with that one.
I mean, the truth is, even Clash of the Titans isn't bad. It's popcorn. It's a remake of Clash of the Titans. It's not trying to be Gladiator. It's not even trying to be Wonder Woman. It's a remake of a Harryhausen movie.
Most recently, Leterrier's directing credits have basically all involved Netflix shows. He was the director, executive producer, and showrunner for Netflix's Lupin, and also directed all the episodes of The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance.
Okay, well, those got pretty decent responses. Being the director of Dark Crystal, that's a hard one to pick up. Like, okay, here's a property that, you know, was handmade by Jim Henson and disrespected by the studio. Do something great with it or everyone's going to hate you forever. Oh, yeah, no, cool. I'll be responsible for making the Dark Muppets work. Sure. Thank you.
From
what I hear, quite well, actually.
Yeah, no, I've heard nothing but good things about Age of Resistance. But at the same time, this does kind of feel like, well, we know this guy won't argue with us, so we'll just go with him to make our lives easier.
Or more specifically, he's not going to argue much with Vin. So, Vin,
or that. You
take him, you use him for whatever you need. If you send him for coffee, you need a stool, whatever. And we'll put his name up as the director, and he gets that credit, and everyone profits, mostly.
Yeah.
Unless it bombs.
Which, let's be honest, is not going to happen.
Even if it's the shittiest fucking film ever, just because it has that branding, people will see it.
Exactly. I'm just sitting here going, James Wan was probably available and has already worked in the franchise, but they picked Leterrier over him. And so with that, we're going to move away from film entirely and go to a story that's a tad out of our wheelhouse. But to me, this is one of those. This involves conversations that, like, should be had. Specifically, a Twitch streamer was threatened with, and this is the part that kind of caught my attention because this is a lawyer's office I would love to be in. She was threatened with a, quote, romance fraud lawsuit from a viewer. Now, the Twitch streamer, who goes by the name Ms. Kenner, says that a wealthy donor had allegedly compromised her income, threatened to dox her, and even suggested legal action, all because she wouldn't reciprocate their feelings of affection.
Jesus Christ.
Now, when I say compromised her income, this person, who I refuse to call a man just on general principle, because I'm sorry, if you are a man, you do not do this. I mean, maybe that's just my thinking here, but like, this irritated me greatly. He basically was just donating tons and tons to her streams. There was a period where she couldn't even get on the internet to stream, and he was still sending her money. Until eventually, and those of you listening can probably figure out where this is going, revealed that they had romantic interest toward her, that considering she has a husband and children, she did not reciprocate, at which point he promptly went ahead and killed all of his PayPal transactions, Twitch donations. Like I said, threatened to dox her, and like went through his bank and said, "Yeah, these are all fraudulent charges. I'm disputing them." So she had to pay all that money back because the bank sided with him.
Jesus Christ.
And threatened her with a $5,000 lawsuit for romance fraud. Again, that is a lawyer meeting I wish I could be a fly on the wall in.
Yeah, that one's gonna get sick. That, oh my God. Like, you know, it's the age of self-made media. It's the age where everyone can be a celebrity for a little bit, at least. You know, you can reach an audience, not necessarily the audience, but an audience. And it's the age of parasocial relationships. And sweet Jesus, when everything goes wrong in one of those, that is terrifying.
Like, yeah.
It's one thing to have that presumption and have to go through, you know, the act of like saying, no, that's not happening, I'm sorry. And, like, losing that further income because they misunderstood what was happening. But for him to go through that effort to callously have it clawed back, what a dickhead.
Oh, yeah, like, this, and I've been on social media and streams and virtual chat rooms and so forth long enough to know that even if it did come out that this specific story was somehow false, this still happens so much that the conversation still needs to be had.
Absolutely.
And like, there, I don't care what anyone says, she is in no way at fault here. This individual, I still refuse to say man. from what she has said, now the tweet that where she initially put this out, she has since deleted that. But when you find an article about this story, they do include the text of the tweet as well as a link to a Twitlonger post where she details, like, everything. And that's still up. And apparently this person is an individual fairly prominent in the music industry.
Ew.
So I've got to assume that they have not heard the word no an awful lot.
No, and they've certainly got far too much money and apparently time. And yeah, as you say, they're used to getting their way. That's going to go worse before it goes better. I hope, actually, they get exposed in the process then. Because if there is an actual suit in court, then I believe their identity will come forward. It depends on the state, I believe, but it should come forward from that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. She did at one point toward the end of her Twitlonger post specifically say, like, she at this point has not exposed his identity. But she did say that, you know, if you dox me, if you put any of my personal info online, at that point, it's on. But I'm a creep.
Final episode of Moon Knight Season 1. Oh, God, it's over. What am I going to do with my life? Ooh, new Star Trek. Nice.
There you go.
Hey!
Yeah, no, that works out nicely.
But, where were we? Oh, yeah! Our hero is dead! Mark is in paradise. Steven is in purgatory / a sand dune. He's just kind of a part of the landscape now. And the bad guys have won. well, we've got an hour to fill in an episode. Let's see how we can walk that back. I can't believe they actually had, like, Egyptian god kaijus. This went from 0 to 60 fast.
Obviously, it had to, because they're trying to do one hell of a lot in 42 minutes.
A hell of a lot. You could almost feel like, okay, no, this is going to need another episode, right? Because what the hell happened? What is going on? You have so much to fill in. And I kind of liked how they immediately solved a bunch of questions that you had from the last episode. It's like, okay, what happens to Mark and Steven? Okay, here's the answer. Oh, thank you. Okay, cool. Thank you. What happened back on Earth? Here's exactly the answer. Oh, okay. Thank you. Now we know what happened to Layla. Yes. Okay. Perfect. The bad guys, Dr. What's his name? I can never remember. Harrow?
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Arthur Harrow? Oh, yeah. No, like, here's exactly what he did after and how he was feeling about it and who he interacted with. Oh, okay. How the hell did you make such an efficient script that in 42 minutes you've told essentially a film and a half worth of content that has said kaiju fight plus an entire other like superhero supervillain fight plus an introduction of a new hero plus people returning from the grave?
Yep.
And none of it feels like a mess. It all kind of like, okay, yeah, that leads to that. And so within 40 minutes, we've gone from a completely different situation to upending the rules of this reality, upending the rules of presumption of like how these stories interact with other stories in Marvel. And then at the very end, it completely upends its own story and character by telling us, pretty much all of that was bullshit in one form or another. Do you want it to be the way where it's just an imaginary tale and everything's fine? Or do you want it where the supervillain god who has enslaved our hero has won, has always won going into it 1 year ago? This whole thing's been a charade. Charade!
Oh, yeah, no, that very ending bit was probably the only part of the episode where I was truly worried, because, especially with the scene in the therapist's office, it almost gets to the point where they go to that well one time too many.
I love that they hit the fuck it button, though, and they're just like,
Wait.
Which one do you want? Who cares? It's whatever you want. Is it in his head? Is it connected? Is it in the MCU? Is it actually just some god fucking about? Who cares? I love it.
Oh, no. The fact that it was all of those things, because when they go back to the therapy session, it seemed like they were going to say, oh, no, it was all in his head the entire time. And I'm just sitting there like, oh, please. Don't do that. And then you see Dr. Harrow's bloody footprints. And I'm just like, oh, thank God that's not what they're doing. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a double whammy mind fuck. Double whammy. Cha-cha.
The only thing with that I had a true objection to, and it's honestly even less of an objection just because of stuff that I read after watching the episode, was when they finally introduced Jake.
Finally. We knew he was there.
Yeah.
Not explicitly, but they've put in enough signs when everyone would blank out and things would just go a little fucky, or the character we see on screen was not necessarily acting the way he usually did. Like, that's not Mark, that's not Steven, what the hell's happening, whatever, we'll get to it later. I like how they held off. They waited until the very end to give a complete status quo flip.
Yeah, like when I say objection, my only thing there is that at the time, as we've previously mentioned, as far as I knew, this was a single one and done season.
And now is probably going to be a much, much more. They're going to give him so much money because everyone wants more Oscar Isaac as Moon Knight. This was fantastic. And yeah. Of course, they introduced Layla's, I don't even know Layla's like superhero character name. I don't think they were too clear about that. But who fucking cares? She looks great.
Oh, yeah. No, she... Layla, at this point, just has so much goodwill with me in general.
And everyone else, it seems. She's just right level of badass and not trite about it.
Oh, yeah. There was... I don't know what they could have possibly done with her that I would have viewed as negative. Like, at this point, I just enjoy her so much that it wouldn't have mattered what they did. I would have still been happy.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, if they had made her Moon Knight, okay. If they had unfortunately killed her, at least she was a real fucking badass. Instead, they made her a completely different superhero, and that's really awesome, too. Cool. More, please.
Oh, not only made her a superhero, but managed to basically take 30 seconds to stop the big series-ending battle to have a little girl look at her and go, "Are you an Egyptian superhero?" And have her go, "Yes, I am."
Yeah, and sometimes that's all you need.
And the whole conversation is actually in Egyptian, and just how they slid that in there was like, well played. Well played.
It's just a smart little thing of like, that's, it doesn't even necessarily matter what her name is. That reality is all that matters. Egypt has its own superhero, and it's not Black Adam who will kill anyone who crosses him. So, considering that 6 episodes ago, I didn't know Mark Spector or Stephen Grant whatsoever, and now I'm in love with them. I'd say that was a pretty successful season of Marvel Television. Mike, what were your final thoughts on season one of Moon Knight?
Oh, it was absolutely, like you said, a huge success. And as I had said earlier, I almost objected to that final stinger, except for one thing. That one thing being that afterward, I did see a quote from the series director saying, basically, "I've told my story now. I would love to come back and for season two and work more in the MCU. And yes, please. Give me that immediately."
Yeah, I'm happy that he was allowed to make 6 episodes of a show in the MCU that didn't have much connection to the MCU. It was allowed to just be.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that the studio allowed him to do that because it showed how much potential he has and how much potential the character has. And every one of their characters has that much potential, really. So, theoretically, this could become another new format of how they do these things. Every now and then, we'll do one that has practically nothing to do with the rest of the universe. Because it doesn't all have to connect. Just because this is the MCU doesn't mean everything has to be a crucial puzzle piece. Sometimes, you get those border bits that are just blue sky. Repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating.
Reiterate for MCU social media, it does not all have to fucking connect. I don't know how many times we have to say this. I don't care, but I will keep saying it. God damn it.
And remember, if it doesn't connect now, we can always retcon it later. It's fiction.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. This has been Real Geeks Presents The B-Roll. I have been Crash and Burn. You, as always, have been Mike Montgomery.
Indeed, I have.
Indeed, and if you enjoyed us being us and us bitching about films and us commenting on just so much that happened last week at CinemaCon, please like, share, and subscribe. Or you could, you know, get in touch with us. If only we had an email.
Hey, what do you know? As a matter of fact, we do.
I'm not paying for that.
Well, God bless you, Google. Which is maybe the only time that I've ever said those words. But we can be found at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. Send us your questions, comments, insults, input, and or advice. Yell at me for stealing that line from another site. Hate mail, I don't care. I practically enjoy arguing things online with people anyway, so.
We'll also take free shit. Please give us free shit.
Yes, free shit, sponsorships, we're good with, like, all of that.
Especially from Marvel. Please, Marvel, give me money.
Yes, those mythical Marvel checks that we have so often heard about, if you know how we get those, any information would be lovely.
Please do write in, and please write in quickly, because our very next episode, we're covering the, and again, I am saying this from experience, really just fantastic Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Oh, God, I cannot wait.
So good. So good. We'll see you next time.
See ya.